favourite poet was a former poet laureate in England, John Betjeman. And one of my favourite poems is called East Anglian Bathe. Oh, when the early morning at the seaside took us with hurrying steps from Horsemere to see the whistling bent grass on the lee side and then the tumbled breaker line appear. On high, the clouds of mighty adumbration sailed over us to seaward fast and clear. And jellyfish in quivering isolation, they silted in the dry sand of the breeze. And we along the tableland of beach blown went goose flesh from our shoulders to our knees and ran to catch the football each to each thrown in the soft and swirling music of the sea. They splashed about our ankles as we waded those intersecting wavelets, morning cold. And sudden dark, a patch of sea was shaded, and sudden light, another patch, would hold the warmth of whirling atoms in the sunshine, and underwater sandstorm, green and gold. So in we dived, and louder than a gunshot, seawater, broken fountains down the ear. How cold the bathe, how shattering cold the drying, how welcoming the inland reeds appear, the wood smoke and the breakfast and the frying, and your warm freshwater ripples, Horsemere.
Joe, we're off to a good start. And next up we have Anita Daly. She there? Seamus, is Anita gone?
Yeah,
she's gone. Thanks, Anita. Sir, for the thought counts. And for the poem, they will never get to hear. We'll hold her to it next time, we'll share it.
Yes.
Next up, could we have Colin Scully?
I just spilled a pint. Somebody else's. I heard this poem read by Greg Delancey at the Spring Poetry Festival in the Metropole Hotel, and I like this. I suppose one thing I like about it is that it's great to be able to read a poem in a Cork accent and know that that's the way it was written. So this is the poem here is that the image here is of just a boy threading a needle for his mother, and that represents, I suppose, his youth, and also the image also represents you know, his life of poetry and his work as a poet. So here it is, it's called To My Mother Eileen. I'm threading the eye of the needle for you again. That is my specially appointed task, my gift that you gave me. Ma, watch me slip this camel of words through. Yes, rich we are still, even if your needlework has long since gone with the rag and bone man. And Dad never came home one day, or Dan. Work, work, work. Lose yourself in work. That's what he'd say. Okay, okay. Ma, listen. I can hear the sticks of our fire spit, like corn turning into popcorn, with the brown insides of rotten teeth. We sit in our old slavish house. Norman is just born. He's in the pen. I raise the needle to the light and lick the thread to stiffen the limp words. I peer through the eye, focus, put everything out of my head. I shut my right eye and thread. I'm important now, a likely lad instead of the Amadon at grade school. I have the eye, haven't I, the knack. I'm Prince of Treader. I missed it, that's right. Concentrate, concentrate. Enough yak to yak. There, there, man, look. Here's the threaded needle back.
Is Earl Michael here? Earl? Earl gone? Next up, could we please welcome Simon Deasy.
This is a poem by an American poet, one of my favorites, called Charles Bukowski. And it's one of my favorite poems. And at the end of this poem, he says something that I would wish to say to anyone who's involved with O'Dea or anyone who's written it, anything, any kind of poems, because they've all given me kind of so much, I think. This is called The Laughing Heart. Your life is your life. Don't let it be clubbed into dank submission. Be on the watch. There are ways out. There is a light somewhere. It may not be much light, but it beats the darkness. Be on the watch. The gods will offer you chances. Know them. Take them. You can't beat death, but you can beat death in life sometimes. And the more often that you learn to do it, the more light that there will be. Your life is your life. Know it while you have it. You are marvelous. The gods wait to delight in you.
Thanks, Simon. Next we have Aidan O'Shea.
Last year I came across an obituary for an American poet called Ruth Stone, who died in her late 90s, but had been writing for many years before. And my curiosity brought me onto the poems, and I've been getting great pleasure and enjoyment from them. There's so much variety of style and content and so on. But I thought for tonight I'd pick a light-hearted one. Maybe there's a little bit of a sting at the end. So it's called Male Gorillas. And Colin was talking about accents, so I've got to try this in the American accent. That's no more than if I try, okay? Horrible American accent. Here goes anyway. At the donut shop, 23 silverbacks are lined up at the bar, sitting on the stools. It's morning coffee and trash day. The waitress has a heavy feeling face, considerate with carmine lipstick. She doesn't brown my fries. I have to stand at the counter and insist on my order. I take my cup of coffee to a small, inoffensive table along the wall. At the counter, the male chorus line is lined up tight. I look at their almost identical butts, their buddy hunched shoulders, the curve of their ancient spines. They're methodically browsing in their own territory. This data goes into that vast, confused library, the female mind.
Thanks, Aidan. Next, we have John Ryan. Can we go back a bit? We don't have John Ryan next. We'll have him in a while. Next up, we have Grant March.
This is a poem by a guy called Taylor Marley, and he's probably one of my favorite, well, probably my favorite poet. He is a teacher in real life, and this one's called What Teachers Make. He says, the problem with teachers is, what's a kid going to learn from someone who's decided his best option in life was to become a teacher? He reminds the other dinner guests that it's true what they say about teachers. Those who can, do. those who can't teach. I decided to bite my tongue instead of his and resist the temptation to remind the other dinner guests that it's also true what they say about lawyers. Because we're eating, after all, and this is polite company. I mean, you're a teacher, Taylor, he says. Be honest, what do you make, hey? What do you make? And I wish he hadn't done that. Because, you see, I have a policy about honesty and ass-kicking. If you ask for it, I have to let you have it. You want to know what I make? I make kids work harder than they ever thought they could. I make a C-plus feel like a Congressional Medal of Honor and an A-minus feel like a slap in the face. How dare you waste my time with anything less than your very best? I make kids sit through 40 hours of study hall in absolute silence. No, you may not work in groups. No, you may not ask a question. Why won't I let you get a drink of water? Because you're not thirsty, that's why. I make parents tremble in fear when I call home. This is Mr. Marley. I hope I haven't called at a bad time. I just wanted to talk to you about something Billy said today. And Billy had said, leave the kid alone. I still cry sometimes, don't you? And it was the noblest act of courage I'd ever seen. I make parents see their children for who they are and what they can be. You want to know what I make? I make kids wonder. I make them question. I make them criticize. I make them apologize and mean it. I make them write, write, write. And then I make them read. And I make them spell definitely beautiful, definitely beautiful, definitely beautiful over and over and over again until they never will misspell either one of those words. I make them show all their work in math and hide it in their final draft in English. And I make them understand that if you've got this, then you follow this. And if anyone tries to judge you by what you make, you give them this. And let me break it down for you so you know what I say is true. I make a goddamn difference. Now what about you?
Making waves there, Grant. Test some more waves. Next up, we have Michael Ray.
Okay, this is by John Cooper Clarke, Heart Disease. One kiss became a weapon. I don't want to bleed in vain. Clouds collide in the heavens. I surrender to the rain. The death bells that also rang like madness from above. I'm going out with a bang and a heart disease called love. 99 below zero would seem like fever now. You know me, no hero. Don't even ask me how. I'm down in the deep, deep freeze. What was I thinking of in the painful breeze by the frozen trees with a heart disease called love? After dinner, mints, a new lover, and the coffee's so bitter and black. Your fingerprints, they cover this knife sticking out of my back. You overlooked the fine details. You should have worn your gloves. I've got a girl in jail, and a house for sale, and a heart disease called love.
Thanks, Michael. I need to make a lot of thank yous to the next reader, but only one of which is coming up with the idea of having this night. So, Billy Ramsell.
I'll read a poem by Louis MacNeice. Very, very soon.
I don't know that one.
There we go. Run out the bolts. my broken comrades, let the old seaweed crack. The surge burgeon, oblivious of the last embarkation of feckless men. Let every adverse force converge. Here we must needs embark again. Run up the sail, my heartsick comrades. Let each horizon tilt and lurch. You know the worst. Your wills are fickle, your values blurred, your hearts impure, and your past life a ruined church. But let your poison be your cure. Put out to sea, ignoble comrades, whose record shall be noble yet. Butting through scarps of moving marble, the Norway dares us to be free. By a high star, our course is set. Our end is life. Put out to sea.
Thank you, Billy. Next, we have Seamus Harrington.
Thanks, Paul. My name is Lee Dickinson, 328, otherwise known by the first line. A bird came down the walk. He did not know it saw. He bit an angleworm in halves and ate the fellow raw. And then he drank a dew from a convenient grass, and then hopped sideways to the wall to let a beetle pass. He glanced with rapid eyes that hurried all around. They looked like frightened beads, I thought. He stirred his velvet head. Like one in danger, cautious, I offered him a crumb. And he unrolled his feathers and rode him softer home. Than oars divide the ocean, too silver for a seam. Our butterflies off banks of noon leap plashless as they swim.
Thanks, Seamus. And next we have Sue Cosgrave.
With things that are happening in Syria at the moment, I thought it was appropriate to read something from the Ballyparla magazine of modern Arab literature, which features Syrian poets. And the one I picked here for this reading is Nazih Abu Afaq, a young Syrian poet. Just two very short poems. One is called For How Long? The earth is overburdened with a legacy of blood, sighs, doctrines, warriors, and prayers by those who have monopoly on God and truth. The earth, how long has it endured? How long shall it continue to endure? And the second poem is called Tourist. Like one envying the dead for their garments, they flirt with the sun of the east, while we are smothered by its darkness. Thank you.
Thank you, Sue. And next we have Patricia Walsh.
Thank you, Paul. This is a song that written by Janis Joplin in the 1960s, and they've updated it slightly. It kind of reflects the situation which most of us experience in the economic downturn. So here it is, called Mercedes-Benz. Oh Lord, would you buy me a Mercedes-Benz? My friends all drive Porsches and must make amends. But had on my lifetime no help from my friends. So Lord, would you buy me a Mercedes-Benz? Oh Lord, would you buy me a PlayStation 3? 500 euros has yet to find me. I'll save for delivery each day until 3. So, Lord, would you buy me a PlayStation 3? Oh, Lord, would you buy me a night on the town? And counting on you, Lord, please don't let me down. Prove that you love me and buy the next round. So, Lord, would you buy me a night on the town? Oh, Lord, would you buy me a Mercedes Benz? My friends all drive Porsches and most say gay men. Or turn on my left hand, no help for my friends. So, Lord, would you buy me a Mercedes Benz?
You wish my kids were there,
Patricia.
Next we have Alfred McKenzie.
This is the runner-up in the Cardiff poetry competition. It's by Mary O'Donnell, and it's called Goth Persephone's Mother Asks Her to Do the Messages. Persephone dear, run you on out, bear the buds with care. They've wintered deeply, and today you must dress the season. Over there, drab hedges in need of blackthorn studs, the chain metal of early dew. Cast your tattooed arms over the chestnut, it's winter chilled since the high hedge was cut, alone on the field's edge. You'd wonder at the man that sprays and plants so that Sister Earth has scarcely a breath between seasons. But run you on out, Persephone, gently mind, along the gardens, along night streets where cherries tremble and rowans fear the boys with knives and needles. Alone, since the older men have left on journeys, sequestered behind high walls, foot-deep metal doors. The lads need us. You, flooring them in black boots, skirt bouncing your hips, makeup like poppy pollen, shove it up the nose of spring till she snorts it high. Fill these baskets, Persephone dear, to the windy streets of cities, towns, rush on to where the young are deserted. We must not fail. Then play a concert in yellow and purple, or optimistic tartans, bagpipes of the branches, hailing life in sun and rain, wee birds on the march, and singing contrapuntal. Away with you, Persephone, lift the garment of spring, bloomers and g-strings, slips and dangling underthings on every tree, hedge, field, bannering out this morning across the provinces. Thank you.
Thanks, Alfred. And next we have Cal Doyle.
Charitable crumb that was going to be served from a certain balcony, like kings of old, or like America. It was still dark. 1 foot of the sun steadied itself on a long ripple in the river. The first ferry of the day had just crossed the river. It was so cold we hoped that the coffee would be very hot, seeing that the sun was not going to warm us, and that the crumb would be a low beach, watered by a miracle. At 7, a man stepped out on the balcony. He stood for a minute, alone on the balcony, looking over our heads toward the river. A servant handed him the makings of a miracle, consisting of one lone cup of coffee and one roll, which he proceeded to crumb, his head, so to speak, in the clouds, along with the sun. Was that man crazy? What under the sun was he trying to do up there on his balcony? Each man received one rather hard crumb with some flicked scornfully into the river, and, in a cup, one drop of coffee. Some of us stood around, waiting for the miracle. I can tell what I saw next. It was not a miracle. A beautiful villa stood in the sun, and from its doors came the smell of the hot coffee. In front, a Baroque white plaster balcony, added by birds who nest along the river. I saw it with one eye close to the crumb, and galleries of marble chambers. My crumb, my mansion, made for me by a miracle, through ages by insects, birds, and the river working the stone, every day in the sun. At breakfast time, I sit on my balcony with my feet up and drink gallons of coffee. We licked up the crumb and swallowed the coffee. A window across the river caught the sun, as if the miracle were working on the wrong balcony. Thanks.
There's Cal, and next we have John McGuire.
Dear me. I may just flash out of it. Thank you. For me, the five words are based on coincidence anyway, and there's a lot of coincidence. I've known about O'Vale for a long time, but only noticed this week that tonight was on, and in the last couple of days I found this bit of paper on which I'd written down one poem and a couple of excerpts from poems that I saw in a gallery in Oxford exactly 20 years ago, and the poems are by, I think he's a Nigerian poet, Odia Ofemun, and they were along with paintings by a man called John Mwafanjeo, and I actually met Odia. I loved the poets so much and I wrote them down. It's bad enough trying to read my own writing, but trying to read my writing of 20 years ago is a real problem. So I'll do one poem of his now, which I absolutely love, called Thinking About Art. I hope I won't stumble over my writing. I listen to a distant gong in my childhood's backwater, in the open moment that closes off the snobbery of books and age. I want to stretch my hand to life as it breathes, beyond the known for the knowable, people and things, time and cattle. I want to knead them together in hope, wrapped in leaves of pure will. I sit still, listening to distance in my childhood's backwater. A dragonfly holding the sun at a standstill to rid the air of absent anchors. I want to witness the simple moments that great events envy, to revel in the eyes that I plucked from my father's eyes, eyes that have armed my vision to draw the kaolin of fate around the circumcision of dreams. I want to be loyal to the naivete, hence I worry when my shed tree threatens to go mad, bowed by fruits that it cannot dissolve.
Thank you, John. And next we have, down from Dublin, Kevin Desmond Storrs.
Very much. This is Theo van Doesburg, 1893-1931. It's a translation by Jerome Rothenberg. It's a book for Poems in the Millennium, Volume 1. We have a lesson on modernism, and we had to fire something that said modernism to us years ago when we was at university, and it was all just bloody rubbish. It was like this, you know, really experimental shite. Like, but this sort of stuck me in. It's called Still Life on the Table. Chaos, all muddled up, a glass of tea, some cups, some pots, and get a fresh look at what's lying there. This is the shadow of a candlestick, a piece of paper and a can in blue, green, brown, black, white and copper, an ashtray with a pipe stem and a very heavy book in blue and yellow, with something that looks brown inside a black can. And the candle there, the light, and a mist around them, and their glow, some spoons, something that's gleaming on the gold rim of the cups, and there's another piece of paper, courant, on which lies a red match, a couple of blue pamphlets, a little piece of string atop a small red box, and then the cloth, half a chair there in the mist, a little further back, and how the yellow cloth becomes green gay, and that much softer, and then here, and here, here on the paper's garish white are two black nails, one that looks real and one a silhouette. My hand, a hill with murky caves, in which a rafter lies between two clumps of clay wedged tight.
Well, thanks very much.
Thank you. And next we have Rav Urquhart.
This is a book that came out in the UK. You can get it here as well, like, but The Nation's Favourite Poem is a BBC publication. And they kind of like, they're a competition. Well, not a competition, but they said to the country, you know, send us your favourite poems, tell us what they are. So, you've got the usual stuff, you've got F and, you know, Shakespeare and T.S. Eliot, Elizabeth Barrett Browne and all these people, but the one that did, the more people sent in, I'm like catching my breath, I've been running upstairs. The one that more people sent in was this anonymous poem, and they looked everywhere to find out who'd written it, and they couldn't figure it out, and says here, claims were made for 19th century magazines and the prayers of Navajo Indian priests, but in the end its origins remain a mystery. In some respects it became the nation's favourite poem by proxy. So, here it is. It's called Do Not Stand in My Grave and Weep. Do not stand in my grave and weep, I am not there, I do not sleep. I am a thousand winds that blow, I am the diamond glints on snow, I am the sunlight on ripened grain, I am the gentle autumn rain. When you awake in the morning's hush, I am the quiet of lifting rush of swift birds in circled flight, I am the soft stars that shine at night. Do not stand at my grave and cry, I am not there, I did not die.
Thanks, Rob. Next up, we have Mile Herod.
I have a little piece from Jacques Prévert, a French poet and filmmaker, enfant du paradis. La vie est brève, un peu de rêve, un peu d'amour, et puis, bonjour. Life is short, a little dreaming, a little loving, and then good day. I just want to say a comment on this. It seems a gloomy poem in some ways. It's a haiku-like observation on life. It seems a bit despondent, but what I take from it is that life is there to be lived, because it's the only thing we know we have for sure. And also the dreaming, the imagination, with phenomena like Oveo are encouraging so magnificently. Thanks.
Thank you, Niall. And next we have Mia Pryor.
This is something that I came across quite recently, and it made me smile, so I feel the need to share it. It's by Winona Baker, called On Mona Lisa's Smile. I know what brought that expression to her face. Leo, during one of her sittings, Leo said to her, "You know, Mona, you're very intelligent for a woman."
That's Okay, we're past all that now, huh? These days are gone. Next up, we have John Ryan.
How are you doing?
I'll keep him for a while. Next up, we have. He has a problem. Next, we have Rosie O'Regan.
I chose one by Kerry Hardy because I really liked her reading, and it just kind of fell open on this page tonight before I came here. So, things that are lost. My mother teaches me the fading skills, how to clean fish, plait garlic, draw pheasants, how to distinguish wading birds, how to make linen lace. I know her ache because it is in me. I try to teach to anyone who will listen wild flowers, their legends, properties, names. I do this in full love of the fresh world. But a voice says, lose things, forget them, let them go. See all things always the first time, unnamed, in wonder.
That's Rosie. We're moving on immediately now to the second round. If it starts concertinaing, which I don't think it will, Padre will probably give us the free rein, but if it does, for whatever reason, I'm just going to have to jump onto those few people who didn't read in the first round. But we'll keep it going as per the list for now. Next up, we have Cal Doyle.
I'm going to read some John Berryman because the shit pays me. Here's this poem sequence, The Dream Song. I'm going to read number 14, which perhaps is most famous. Life, friends, is boring. We must not say so. After all, the sky flashes, the great sea yearns. We ourselves flash and yearn, and moreover, my mother told me as a boy, repeatedly, ever to confess you're bored means you have no inner resources. I conclude now I have no inner resources, because I am heavy bored. Peoples bore me. Literature bores me, especially great literature. Henry bores me with his plight and gripes, as bad as Achilles, who loves people and valiant art, which bores me. And the tranquil hills and gin look like a drag, and somehow a dog has taken itself and its tail considerably away into mountains or sea or sky, leaving behind me wag.
Thanks, Carl. And next, once again, we have Abe Noshay.
There are many poets who are forgotten or ignored in the present time. This is by Siegfried Sassoon, who served in the First World War, was commended for his bravery, then asked to be relieved of his commission and went against the war, against public opinion. And this could be thought of as a moment when, at Christmas time, the Allied and the German troops sang together. I can just take in about the whole process of creativity and singing and poetry making. That's why I picked it. Everyone sang. Everyone suddenly burst out singing, and I was filled with such delight as prisoned birds must find in freedom, winging wildly across the white orchards and dark green fields, on and out of sight. Everyone's voice was suddenly lifted, and beauty came like the setting sun. My heart was shaken with tears, and horror drifted away. Oh, but everyone was a bird, and the song was wordless. The singing will never be done.
But there's lots of cake left here. I'm going to stick it up in the bar there towards the end, so maybe just grab some.
There we go, Shane.
Thank you, Shane. And next up, well, we have Ruth Fortune.
At this very moment, because I am in the house by myself and the weekend is here, I believe that brilliant and exciting things are happening everywhere else in the world. People are falling in love and winning millions of pounds and jumping up and down with cans of Pepsi in their hands and effortlessly enjoying multiple orgasms. Their phones never stop ringing and everybody is laughing and water skiing and hang gliding and horse riding and bungee jumping with a can of Pepsi in one hand and a Cadbury Slate in the other. Everybody is tanned and good looking and bronzed and lithe and athletic. I think I'll ring the takeaway and order sweet and sour king prawn with boiled rice and a can of Pepsi. Then I'll climb up onto my roof and slide down it in my cat's litter tray, waving the can in the air with one hand and faking a multiple orgasm with the other. Then I'll phone everybody in the whole world one by one and say, "You should have been here 2 minutes ago. You missed it."
Thank you, Ruth. And next up, we have, again, Seamus Harrington.
Thanks, Father. I came across the song a couple years ago on holidays, and even though some songs don't work as poems, I still would like to share it with you. Did anyone come across Psalm 1952, Vincent Black Lightning?
Yeah.
Well, I hadn't either, but until a couple of years ago, there was a supercharged special version sold to buy it. This is $383,000. It was written by Richard Thompson in about 91, I think. He's made his recording debut Fairport Convention in 1967, and it's the most requested song on 900 public radio stations in the US, National Public Radio. 1952, Vincent Black Lightning. "Oh," says Red Molly to James, "that's a fine motorbike. A girl could feel special on any such like." Said James to Red Molly, "My hat's off to you. It's a Vincent Black Lightning, 1952. And I've seen you at the corners and cafes, it seems. Red hair and black leather, my favourite colour scheme." And he pulled her on behind, and down to Box Hill they did ride. "Oh," says James to Red Molly, "here's the ring for your right hand. But I tell you in earnest, I'm a dangerous man. For I fought with the law since I was 17. I robbed many a man to get my Vincent machine. Now I'm 21 years, I might make 22, and I don't mind dying but for the love of you. And if fate should break my stride, then I'll give you my Vincent to ride." Come down, Red Molly," said Sergeant McRae, "for they've taken young James 80 for armed robbery. Shotgun blast hit his chest, left nothing inside. Oh, come down, Red Molly, to his dying bedside." When she came to the hospital, there wasn't much left. He was running out of road, he was running out of breath. But he smiled to see her cry. He said, "I'll give you my Vincent to ride." Said James, "In my opinion, There's nothing in this world beats a 52 Vincent and a red-headed girl. No Nortons and Indians and Greaves won't do. They don't have a soul like the Vincent 52. Oh, he reached for her hand and he slipped her the keys. Said, I've got no further use for these. I see angels and aerials in leathers and chrome swooping down from heaven to carry me home. And he gave her one last kiss and died. And he gave her his Vincent to ride.
Thank you, Seamus. Tara has very kindly allowed us to go over time, as we still have about 10 people left. And then we'll be done. We can head off to the after party and relax, if you like. And next up, Sue Cosgrove. Not that we're not relaxed right now, but I mean, relax a bit more.
Okay, Paul, I'm not this short. I can't be that short, anyway. I didn't know what to read. I've had three books there, and I was looking through them, and I said I'll stick to this Bunny Pal journal and read something by a teenage girl called Rima Blaine, because I have teenagers at home, and it's called Teenage Angst. And it kind of fits with where I am with my children at the moment. It's called A Hole in the Head. Gather your poems, burn them, and let them warm you. Collect your dreams, hang them on the nail in the back of your head. Light your cigarette. Turn on your recorder to the voice of Bob Marley, No Woman, No Cry. Drink your coffee hot. Don't let it cool. Clean your pistol well. One bullet will be enough. Wipe the bullet with alcohol so it passes without pain. Put the picture of your beloved on your left shirt pocket. Point towards the head. Then fire. Take the picture out. Be sure the hole is in the head. Wipe the blood from your shirt, the fingerprints from the pistol, then
thank you, Sue. Next, Africa Benji.
This is a poet I discovered recently. And I just thought I'd read the song that I really enjoy, his observation. His name's Paul Hostovsky. Anyone know? Paul Hostovsky, American. A woman taking off her shirt does so with arms crossed over her belly like she's hugging herself. And each hand takes hold above the opposite hip and off it comes in a fluid motion, like a fountain shooting up and falling down in a great arc. The shirt rising up, and the breasts rising and falling, and the hair falling, and finally the hands falling to her side, with the shirt in one hand, inside out. While the man, taking off his shirt, wrestles it off, grabs his own collar first like he's going to beat himself up, then dips his chin down like a fighter into the dark well of the shirt and climbs down into it, reaching back and grabbing a hold and pulling it up over himself and pulling himself down through it and out.
Thanks, Patrick. Next we have Russell Blue.
Anything else but my German favorite poem, poet, August Stamm. I've been working on translations, but tonight I'm only allowed to read the German version, his version. August Stamm wrote or published between 1913 and 1915, fell in the First World War, was an officer and fought till the last fight in the East. He wrote a set of love poetry and a set of war poetry. This poem here is one of his most famous poems to be found, and it was actually published posthumously by his publisher, and it's under the love poems, but it is a war poem really. It talks about a pleasure house. Lichte Dirnen aus den Fenstern, die Seuche spreitet an der Tür und bietet Weiberstöhnen aus. Frauensälen schämen grelle Lache, Mutterschöße gähnen Kindestod. Ungeborenes geistet dünstelnd durch die Räume. Scheu im Winkel, Schand zerbört, verkriecht sich das Geschlecht.
Next, next we have Michael O'Callaghan.
I was just thinking how age is handy for the critical faculties, because you don't have to be critical so much anymore. You just see what survives. And this little poem survived since school time, 40 years. So I trust that I like it. I must like it because I still remember it. It's a Manly Hopkins poem. This darksome burn, horseback brown, his roll rock high road roaring down in coop and in comb, the fleece of his foam flutes, and low to the lake falls home. A windpuff bonnet of foam froth turns and bundles over the broth of a pool so pitch black, fell, frowning, it rounds and rounds despair to drowning. Dagged with dew, dappled with dew, are the groins of the braes that the brook treads through. Wiry heath packs, flitches of fern, and the bead bonny ash that sits over the burn. What would the world be once bereft of wet and wildness? Let them be left. Let them be left. Oh, let them be left. Long live the wet and the wildness yet. Thank you.
Thanks, Michael. Just about seven people to go now. So, once again, we have Kevin Desmond-Swords.
This is a poem by the legendary poet called James Kelly from Kerry. He travels all around the island selling his poems in a chapel. If you've met him, you know he's got a voice like human bird song. This one's called Ted Hughes, after the death of Ted Hughes. Like poems, the landscape comes alive in death. In your poems, the rabbit's blood in evening sun has wobbled to set for Plath's moon. Alive behind these fine poems, there must have been a powerful loneliness that crept like some great darkness. Like the thought fox with his clever eye, you are he, thought fox, trying to escape the cage of disturbing consequences or feminist rage, ready to pounce on those platitudes of prey, Sylvia a victim of that day. Now innocent too poets are, with all our deep and hidden hearts, like all true lovers of the arts. Now I know who these women are, how they hold their heads at night and sought a reclusive soul for light. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Gavin. Next we have again Simon Deasy.
I love this poem because it seems to have begun with a lump in the throat. It was written by a man who was a boy who loved writing poetry, and he fell in love with poetry, and he loved writing poetry, and that's what he did first. And then when he made it as a prose writer, as a man, then he wrote this poem as a rebuke to people, who was pretty much everyone, who said that he couldn't write poetry for shit. So this is a poem called, the MacDougall Street Blues, and it's written by Jack Kerouac. The goofy, foolish human parade passing on Sunday art streets of Greenwich Village. Pitiful drawings of images on an iron fence, ranged there by self-believing artists with no hair and black berets, showing green seas eating at rocks and Pleiades of time. Pestiferating at moon squids, salt flat tip fly toe, tat sand traps with cigars smoking interested, puffing at the stroll, I mean sincerely, naive sailors buying prints, women with red banjos on their handbags and art, handicrafty, slow, shuffling, arters of Washington Square, passing in what they think is a happy June afternoon. Good God, the sorrow. They don't even listen to me when I tell them that they will die. They say, of course, I know I will die. Why should you mention it now? Why should you worry about it? It'll all happen. It'll all happen. Now I want a good time. Oh, come on, excuse me. It's a beautiful June afternoon. I just want to walk in it. Why are you so tragic and gloomy? In the corner at the pony stable on 6th Avenue and 4th sits Bodhisattva meditating in Hobie rags, praying at Joe Gould's chair for the emancipation. Or the shuffler is passing by, immovable in meditation. He offers his hand and feet to the passers-by, and nobody believes that there's nothing to believe in. Listen to me. There is no sidewalk art show, no strollers are there, no poem here, no June afternoon of oh, but only imaginelessness, unrepresented on the iron fence of bald artists with black berets passing by one moment less than this. Is future nothingness already? The chessmen are silent, assembled, ready for funny war. Voices of Washington Square blues rise to my Bodhisattva poem window. I will describe them now. Ektikappa, Salosu, Fructa, Fukta, etc. No need for words now to describe the sound of ignorance. They are strolling on to their death, watching the pictures of hell, eating ice cream of ignorance on wood sticks that were once sincere in trees. But I can't write poetry, just prose.
Hey Simon, is there anyone who hasn't given me their name who would like to read a poem by someone else who hasn't read? No? Okay. We'll just try and move through these last people. We just have just under 10 minutes, I think, before we need to be out of here. So, if I can keep them to short runs, that'd be great. Michael Ray. Sure? Shalom. Kieran McCartan.
This is going to be read fast because it's perhaps not short, but this is a storybook that was given as a child and read to as a child, and as I was read it then, I read it to you now. This is for you and the inner beauty in all of you, and it's called All the Places You Will Go by Dr. Seuss. Congratulations! Today is your day. You're off to great places. You're off and away. You have brains in your head and feet in your shoes. You can steer yourself any direction you choose.
You're on your own, and you know what you know, and you are the guy or girl who will decide where to go. You look up and down streets, you look them over with care. About some you'll say, I don't choose to go there. With your head full of brains and your shoes full of feet, you're too smart to go down any not-so-good street. And you may not find any you'll want to go down. In that case, of course, you'll head straight out of town. It's opener there, in the wide open air. As there, things can happen, and frequently do, to people as brainy and footsy as you. And then things start to happen. Don't worry. Don't stew. Just go right along. You'll start happening, too. Oh, the places you will go. You'll be on your way up. You'll be seeing great sights. You'll join the high flyers who soar to high heights. You won't lag behind because you'll have the speed. You'll pass the whole gang and you'll soon take the lead. Wherever you fly, you'll be the best of the best. Wherever you go, you will top all the rest. Except when you don't. Because sometimes you won't. I'm sorry to say so, but sadly it's true that bang-ups and hang-ups can happen to you. You can get all hung up in a ickly perch, and your gang will fly on, you'll be left in the lurch. You'll come down from the lurch with an unpleasant bump, and the chances are then that you'll be in a slump. And then you're in a slump. You're not in for much fun. Unslumping yourself is not easily done. You will come to a place where the streets are not marked. Some windows are lighted, but mostly they're damped. A place you could sprain both your elbow and chin. Do you dare to stay out? Do you dare to go in? How much can you lose? How much can you win? And if you go in, should you turn left or right, or right in three quarters, or maybe not quite, or go around back and sneak in from behind? Simple it's not, I'm afraid you will find, for a mind maker upper to make up his mind. You can get so confused that you'll start into race, down long wriggled roads at breaknecking pace, and grind on for miles across weirdish wild space, headed, I fear, towards a most useless place. The waiting place. For people just waiting. Waiting for a train to go, or a bus to come, or a plane to go, or the mail to come, or the rain to go, or the phone to ring, or the snow to snow, or waiting around for a yes or a no, or waiting for their hair to grow. Everyone is just waiting. Waiting for the fish to bite, or waiting for the wind to fly your kite, or waiting around for a Friday night, or waiting perhaps for their Uncle Jacob, or for a pot to boil, or a better break, or a string of pearls, or a pair of pants, or a wing of curls, or another chance. Everyone is just waiting. No, no, that's not you. Somehow you'll escape. All that waiting and staying, you'll find the bright places where boom bands are playing. Where, with banner flip-flapping, once more you'll ride high, ready for anything under the sky, ready because you're that kind of guy, or girl. All the places you'll go, there's fun to be done, there are points to be scored, there are games to be won, and the magical things you can do with that ball will make you the winningest winner of all. Fame. You'll be famous, as famous can be, with the whole world watching you win on TV. Except when they won't, because sometimes they don't. I'm afraid that sometimes you'll play lonely games too. Games you can't win, because you play against you. All alone, whether you like it or not, alone is something you'll be quite a lot. And when you're alone, there's a very good chance you'll meet things that scare you right out of your pants. There are some down the road between hither and yon that can scare you so much you won't want to go on. But on you will go, through the weather befoul, On you will go, though your enemies prowl. On you will go, though the hacking cracks howl. Onward up many frightening creeks. Though your arms may get sore and your sneakers may leak. On and on you will hike. And I know you'll hike fair and face up to your problems, whatever they are. You'll get mixed up, of course, as you already know. You'll get mixed up with strange birds as you go. So be sure when you step, step with care and great tact. And remember that life's a great balancing act. Just never forget to be dexterous in death. And never mix up your right foot with your left. Oh, and you will succeed. Yes, you will indeed. 98.75% guaranteed. Kids, you'll move mountains. So, be your name Buxbaum or Bixby or Bray or Mordecai Allen Van Allen O'Shea? You're off to great places. Today is your day. Your mountain is waiting. So, get on your way.
So next four bonus sets, next Grand March.
For me, it's been a great night to hear some poets and poems that I haven't heard in a long time, kind of bring back a lot of memories. I'm just going to do a very, very short poem by a guy called Seamus Hogan, who lives in North Cork. I'm a countryman, what the title of it is, and it's, I think I've got most of it, but I'll just try it anyway. Satiate on sunlight, off a plate of honeysuckle perfume, instead of burying the freshness of a moment in damp cellars of patience, squeeze from the bitter citrus of what happens a drop of pure present.
Thank you, Grant. Next we have Joe Hardy, please. He left. Gone. Rabble across.
This is by a woman called Jenny Joseph. It's called Warning. When I am an old woman, I shall wear purple with a red hat which doesn't go and doesn't suit me. I shall spend my pension on brandy and summer gloves and satin sandals and say we've no money for butter. I shall sit down on the pavement when I'm tired and gobble up samples in shops and press alarm bells and run my stick along the public railings and make up for the sobriety of my youth. I shall go out in my slippers in the rain and pick the flowers in other people's gardens and learn to spit. You can wear terrible shirts and grow more fat and eat 3 pounds of sausages at a go and only bread and pickle for a week and hoard pens and pencils and beer mats and things in boxes. But now we must have clothes that keep us dry and pay our rent and not swear in the street and set a good example for the children. We must have friends to dinner and read the papers. But maybe I ought to practice a little more so people who know me are not too shocked and surprised when I am suddenly old and start to wear purple.
Thank you, Rab. And we just have one more before we head up to the Zanata party up at Smith Grove Terrace. You're all welcome. There's lots of pizzas and beers and wine, and it's lovely to see you up there. And we'll be probably going until sunrise. So, the last poem of our 5th anniversary, Mr. Conor McManus.
Thanks, Paul. This is called Spleen by Charles Baudelaire. Pluvius, irritated with the entire city, pours from his urn in great waves a dismal cold over the pale inhabitants of the neighbouring cemetery and mortality over the foggy outskirts. My cat on the stones looking for a litter ceaselessly moves its thin, mangy body. The soul of an old poet wanders along the rain spout with the sad voice of a chilblained phantom. The bell mourns and the smoky log accompanies in falsetto the wheezing clock, while in a pack of cards full of filthy odours, the fatal bequest of an old dropsical woman, the handsome knave of hearts and the queen of spades, talk darkly about their dead love.